that again. We love him. Perfection, Jesus Christ. Even perfection we don't love unless he loved us first. Now you want you in perfection to be loved first. Oh, no, 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 no. Read that again. We love him because he first loved us. So now you want someone to love you? What do you have to do?
Love him first.
Well, I knew there was against it. You cannot escape it. There it is in black and white and red all over. We love him because he first loved us. Let me tell you something. If you don't get in the mode of loving first, you're in for a long, sad, lonely, and very well-deserved life. It's not that hard to love first. When you realize what he loved first. We love him because he first loved us. What a lesson. He's saying even God, the perfection of the universe, the creator of heaven and earth, even he, no one was looking for God. He had to come for us. He had to love us first. You cannot even love perfection unless it loves you first. How are you going to get your wife to love you, imperfect as you are, unless you love her first? And how are you going to get him to love you? Because you want to be number one. I want to be number one. That's why you always act like number two. Verse 20. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, is a liar. This room is full of liars. You love God. No, you don't. Because you avoid your brethren. You hate your brother, and that makes you a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? See, God is saying, you're such a liar. I've shown you, and incidentally, I was speaking with someone this morning. We're talking about family. And I said, you know, if you really stop to think about it, you pick the person in this church family that treats you the absolute worst, that you have the most difficulty with, and that person treats you 1,000 times better than anybody on the outside. But you don't want to see it that way. If a man say, I love God, and he hateth his brother, he's a liar. It's just that simple. The fact of the matter is, if you can't love me, whom you have seen, how are you going to love God, whom you have not seen? And then we close it with verse 21. And this commandment, not suggestion, and this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God, love his brother also. So now what is this telling you? Oh, I want to love the Lord. I want to love the right God. I don't want to love drugs and alcohol. Here's the answer in verse 21. That he who loveth God, love his brother also. Until you get the thing you can do, you're not going to do the other. You want to love Jesus Christ? You want to be his friend, his companion? You want to follow him? You want to be influenced by him? You want all those things that he's promised? Very simple. Love your brother first. Not after, not in between. First. And if you're not willing to do it first, then you have a problem. And you can tithe till you're purple. And it's not going to do you any good. You got to love your brother first. And which ones? The worst ones. The ones. And we'll be dealing with that tonight. Well, if you love those that love. Oh, I love Sister Guacamole. And Brother Doodad, well, he is the salt of the earth. Well, of course you love them. They love you. But what about those people that don't quite suit your fancy? A pox on them and a plague and away with them to the temple of doom, right? You see, you don't love God because you don't love your brother. Now you come back tonight, we're going to be talking about love. And we're not going to be jumping a lot of pews because, you see, if this message made you happy, it would be because you loved right. This message made you unhappy and made you realize some things, and obviously it's because you're wrong and God is right. Now tonight we'll come with the second message, thou shalt love, the second part of the commandment. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Some of you are going to like it, and the rest of you are going to like it. Brother Weldon, would you close the service in prayer? Help us, Father, to understand and rely upon you. Nothing else but Jesus and nothing less than Jesus is our prayer. In Jesus' name, amen. In the 36th verse, the lawyer who's trying to tempt Jesus typically starts the temptation by calling him master. You approach people as a friend, and you really are trying to entangle them in their words because you have a scheme. This man said, "Master," which is a joke right off the bat, "which is the great commandment in the law?" See, thinking he knows everything, he said, "Which is the great commandment?" In other words, which is the one great commandment? Not knowing there were two. But you see, he didn't come and ask the Lord, "Are there any great commandments? And if so, how many?" He already decided how many there were. And he said, "Now, which one is the great one?" Now, he had his own idea. He wanted to see what Jesus said. Jesus, in verse 37, said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment." We went in great detail this morning about how you love, what you love, and with what you love them with. All your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. Then he said, "This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it." In other words, there's another one. That second one is, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." Now Jesus said, the second is like unto the first. And he called the first one the great commandment. Now this great commandment is, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind." Now he said the second commandment is just like the first one, which is, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." How? With all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. In other words, what Jesus is saying, if you love me, you will love them. The same way, by the way. So he didn't say that you will love me and then you will love them. He said, however you love me is the way you love them. Now, it doesn't take a genius to figure out, and certainly you would be the one qualified because it doesn't take a genius, to figure out just how, I didn't say if, how do you love your wife? Ladies, I'm not asking you if you love your husband, I'm asking you how do you love him? Well, you love him the same way you love the Lord your God. In other words, if you are suspicious of Jesus, and you only obey him when you're good and ready, and if you like it, and if he consults with you, by the way, and gets your approval first, then that's the way you're going to love your neighbors. You can't do it any different. That's why Jesus said the second commandment is like unto the first commandment. And then so that you could understand the importance of it, he said in verse 40, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. In other words, everything that you want to learn and by the prophets hang on these two commandments. Loving the Lord thy God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and your neighbor the same way. Now these two commandments, by the way, are not only inclusive of God and your neighbor. It says also, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So what are we saying here? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. Thou shalt love thy neighbor with all thy heart, all thy soul, and all thy mind. Thou shalt love thyself with all thy heart, all thy soul, and all thy mind. That one you have no problem with. Now, what is that saying to you? Jesus is saying, thou liar, thouest. Because you say you can't love God with all your heart, all your soul, and your mind because you're trying. And you, oh, it's so hard. And though you'd love to love one another that way, it's so hard. You don't understand. I'm working on this and I'm counseling and I'm speaking against it. And one day I'll know how. And then we come to you and you've been loving you with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind since before you were out of diapers. What a liar. But you see, the problem is you're lying to yourself, because you see, when you tell an untruth, it doesn't become a lie until it deceives someone. People tell me untruths all the time, but I don't believe them. So nobody can lie to me. And why? Because I don't lie to you. So you see, the fact that someone tells you an untruth is not the problem. The world is full of tellers of untruths. Untruthers, if you will. But you see, untruthers can't untruth anyone but a liar. Because if you lie, you're going to be lied to. Because as you would that men would do unto you, do ye so even unto them. So you see, there's a real benefit in my telling you the truth, whether you like it or not. Because then I go through my life hearing a lot of untruth and believing none of it. And incidentally, that's why you don't like me. Because you see, you're used and you love to have someone believe your untruth. And when they believe your untruth, that makes your lie or their lie, which is your untruth, the truth. Actually, it makes it an anti-truth, because it's the opposite of the truth. So you need to understand here, there's three that you need to love: God, your neighbor, and yourself, the same identical way. Where should you start in all of this? Obviously, you should start with God, and then your neighbor, and then you. How do you like to do it? Why, the other way around, of course. And as soon as you do the last one first, you get amnesia and arthritis and a few other things that make the other two impossible. And Jesus is saying, isn't it time for you to understand that you're telling an untruth, because I don't believe you? And you see, the reason that I know that Jesus doesn't believe you, because I don't believe you. Now, if someone as ill-equipped as I am doesn't believe you, how could God believe you? The fact of the matter is, you are a liar from the get-go, right from the beginning. You start lying. And the reason that you lied so well, by the way, is that people have been telling you untruths about yourself from day one. You love that. So you see, you have a long history of loving the lie. So when it comes time to offer you Jesus in exchange for the lie, Barabbas, what do you say? Crucify the truth and give me Barabbas. And by the way, when you crucify him, may his blood be on me and my children forever. And then come back and say, what happened? What's wrong? Your big mouth, as usual, is what's wrong. See, there's two ways we could solve this problem. One, obviously, is with a repentive mind and a change of heart on your part, which is the hard way. It takes, it shouldn't be. And then there's always plaster of Paris, which is illegal. Just give you a mouthful of cement. Too bad we can't do it that way. Life would be so much easier for the rest of us who are sane. But now we come to the second part, having realized that loving the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind is the first. The second one is love thy neighbor as thyself. Now we go to that scripture. Jesus said the second is like unto it. Same thing. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. But you love the neighbor and thyself the same way you love God. The way you're supposed to love him is with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And incidentally, that's the way that you do. The problem is the God isn't Jesus. You don't love the truth that way. So see, you love a lie. So therefore, when someone comes along and tells you the truth, you don't love them because you love a lie. Now, this word love, again, is the same as the one when Jesus was talking about loving the Lord thy God. It means to love in a social or a moral sense. In other words, it's the same word that Jesus used when he said, this is the way you should love the Lord thy God, in a social or moral sense. To be a friend to have affection for. Remember, the social sense meant to follow and be a companion. It means living together in a situation in which your dealings with one another affects the common welfare. See, Jesus said you ought to live together in such a way that what you do and what your friend does, your neighbor, ought to be for your common welfare. But that's not the way it is. You fight and squabble and you're jealous and angry and critical of one another. And there's no common welfare there at all. Social also means offering material aid, counseling service, group recreational activities to those who need it. In other words, God is saying you ought to love each other in such a way that you live together for your common good. Assuming that you love the right God. But let's assume, let's not assume, let's say, because you do, you love the wrong God. So now if, see, this is positive. To love Jesus is positive. But let's say you love the negative. Let's not say that. Let's believe that because it's true. So if loving Jesus means living together in a situation where your dealings affect each other for the common welfare, then if your God is the devil, the negative, the accuser of the brethren, then you live together in situations in which your dealings with one another affects your common disaster. Yeah. See, that's the flip side of this coin. You've got to understand that this whole thing is controlled by who the Lord and who the God is. If it's Jesus Christ as Lord and God, then it's common welfare. But you see, you cannot have a situation in your family where living together produces a negative and then kid yourself that you love Jesus Christ as Lord and God. You're not only a liar, you're a fool on top of that. Now he says you should also love your neighbor in a moral sense. What Jesus is really saying is if, see, because you tell yourself, I love Jesus in a social sense. I love him in a moral sense. I'm his friend. I have affection for him. I love him. I love him. I love him. Well, see, there's no way to test that, is there? So Jesus said, I've come up with a test. The way you love your neighbor, which is the way you love yourself, is all going to be controlled by how you love God. So now he says, now let's see how you love your neighbor in a moral sense. Moral means capable of making the distinction between right and wrong in conduct. Now, Jesus looks at my conduct, and he makes the distinction between right and wrong. He says, the right that you did is Jesus and you, because you're both my sons. The wrong that you did is the devil, who is my enemy, and I know the difference between the two. Now, you look at your neighbor, and you can't make a distinction between the right and wrong in that individual. You think it's all one. Now you say, well, how could I know? I know that you know, because when that person does something right, you don't give them the credit. You either ignore it or you give the Lord the credit. When you give the Lord the credit, that's right. When you ignore it, that's not too good. But then when you turn around and that same person does something wrong, you sure give them the credit then. So see, not being able to make the distinction is one of the biggest lies you tell yourself. You do it all the time if the person is acting in a way that you can judge and criticize them. If they're acting in a way that you cannot judge and criticize them, then you ignore it. Or in your infinite exodor, long-flowing robes wisdom, you give the Lord the credit. So see, you're not able to love in a moral sense. In other words, to love in a moral sense means to be able to look and make the distinction in your neighbor between right and wrong, knowing that the body without spirit is dead, which means whatever right I do, it's the spirit of right, the Holy Spirit. Whatever wrong I do is the spirit of Antichrist. So what are you bugging me for? Why are you bothering me? I don't do it to you. I know the difference. I know who your daddy is. So you see, this moral sense is to have the capability of making the distinction between right and wrong, and then to teach in accordance with the principles of that right and wrong. Now you see, you only judge in accordance with the principles of right and wrong. You don't teach that way, do you? Because you see, when someone else does right or wrong, you judge. When it comes time for you to teach, which is every day, you teach in accordance with the principles of what you like, according to your sight, your hearing, your taste, your smell, and your feel, the touch. Thank you. Somebody in the back went that way. So you see, if it's moral to make a distinction between right and wrong, then it's immoral not to make the distinction. Now, when it comes time to you doing something right and wrong, you don't know. Well, I didn't know I did that. Did I do that? Oh, my God, I didn't mean that. Oh, I can't believe I did that. Oh, you're right, I did. Oh, my God in heaven. Total amnesia, total attack of stupiditis. 10 minutes later, you're on the phone, and you have dissected someone down to the point where you know their blood pressure. Well, what happened? You must have taken a quick course in religiosity, dosidicity. I don't know how else to explain it. He says, now also, you love your neighbor with affection. You have affection for them. Affection means a mental or emotional state, a disposition toward them that affects them. And affect means to influence in order to produce a change in, to move or to stir. You see, you hate each other because you're not willing to do that. Whatever your wife or your husband does, you lie and you suppress the anger and you pretend like you're going along with it and you're lying in your teeth. You're not willing to influence them and produce a change in them. You're not willing to tell them the truth because they might not like you. He says also, you love the neighbor, you be a friend to your neighbor. Neighbor, again, means a person on the same side in a struggle. Do you think that individual is any happier about how they're acting than you are? Of course not. See, you should be on the same side in a struggle, but you're not. See, when you act wrong, I know you want to change, you just don't know how. So we're on the same side of the struggle. You want to change, and I want to help you change. But you do to one another, and the minute they do something wrong, you want to crucify them. You want to kill them. You want to judge them. I don't think you're on the same side. Now, I want to call your attention to something. Jesus said, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. He didn't say anything about brothers. Do you know there's a difference between a brother and a neighbor? All of you are brothers and sisters, but most of you, thank God, are not my neighbors. Now let me tell you why I say that. And you might in return say the feeling is mutual there, Brother Boob. Brother Rutan, where's my little Rutan girl? Yes, Sister Rutan. Says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. In other words, you will deal with your neighbor as yourself. Now, you're going to find out neighbor is synonymous with self. You shall love thyself as thyself. We could say it that way. I'll tell you what I mean in a minute. I'm going to tell you why you have such a difficulty Doesn't say again, love your brother or your sister. It says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There's a lot of scriptures that say how we're to love our brothers, how to forgive the brother, how to support and help the brethren and the sisterin and the cousinin. But here we're being told you're going to love your neighbor as yourself. In other words, however you treat you is the way you're going to treat your neighbor. Which means, basically, whatever's wrong with you that you don't like about you, you got to find a neighbor, someone just like you, so that you can take it out on them. Or someone that you perceive like you, whether they're like you or not, is not the issue. Now the word neighbor from the Greek means a fellow countryman. One who comes from your own country. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Neighbor means someone who is near. Someone who is near as a neighbor. Thou shalt love thy near as thyself. Near means someone who is close in relationship, close in feelings, close in desires, close in friendship, and only a short distance from you. Now, what is Jesus telling you here? He's saying the only individual that you can deal with is the one you're close in relation to, close in feelings, close in desires, close in friendship, and only a short distance from. Now, let's assume that your neighbor, who used to be as stupid as you are now, and having learned and changed their attitude, now is no longer close to you in relationship. And your pride and ego now sees this individual above you, rightfully so. But you forget something. Jesus exalted him, not you, and not the individual. Now you are trying to humble someone who Jesus has exalted. Oh, you don't even know what you're trying. So see, the problem is, as you gravitate to friendships, you always gravitate to people just as bad or as good, whatever the case is, like you. Now we get together in this family, and some of you grow faster than others. Some of you don't grow at all. And some of you, by God, are shrinking. So now, as that happens, the closeness in relationship gets further and further away. So then there's no more closeness in feelings, no more closeness in desires, no more closeness in friendship. There's a lot of distance between you. So what has happened? They're growing and you're not. So you see, the Lord is saying, now you cannot deal with that individual in love. So now here's what happens. You're stuck in the mud. You're a stick in the mud of life. In the creek bottoms, the swamp of life, you're stuck. Now, we started out together. All of us is stupid. All of us is demented. All of us the same way. But we started growing and moving. And you refuse to. So our relationship gets weaker and weaker and more distance between us and more unlikeness between us. So what happens? Well, you're hurting for neighbors. So you either try to make that individual like you in your mind, whether they are or not, in which case you're going to have me on your back. I told you before, you can say what you want about me, but watch what you say about the sheep. I'm not saying I'm going to get physical with you. I'm not into, what's that gal's name? Yeah, Olivia, Delivia, whatever her name, Delilah, whatever her name is. I don't say let's get physical, but I'm telling you one thing. I've been praying for you a long time. I have no difficulty praying about you. I'd rather pray for you, but I have to pray about you. I will. Because among the things that I take more serious than anything else I have to do is protect the sheep. That's my sworn job. And let me tell you something. David took, and he took a lion and ripped its jaws apart as a teenager. That's a lion. And he was a teenager. What problem would I have with a cockroach like you? A slug that leaves a slime trail. Why, one stomp and a crack and you're done. You make a serious mistake when you attack the sheep. See, God has only equipped one among us to defend himself and to defend everyone else, and that be me. But you see, he's also equipped me not only to defend you from the outside external forces, but from one another. Amen. See, I really thought when I first became a pastor, I was going to stand in front of the church with a sword and a shield, saving you from all the onslaughts of the evil one and the attack from the outside world. And as I was standing there with my shield and my cape flowing in the wind, looking for the attack on the pinnacle, I heard some commotion behind me. And the sheep were killing one another. And I turned around and I realized, here's where the battle is. So I put away my shield and my flowing robes and my cape, and I start jumping right in your face, because that's where I'm all size 10 and a half, right in your face. That's where they belong. So the difficulty we have here, you need to understand this. It's God's way of showing you, if you don't come along and grow, there's going to be a relationship problem developing. Now look at your marriages, my friends. It isn't just with one another as family to family. God's leading us, and you're lagging. And you're going to start seeing that disparity in your relationship with your wife and your husband, and the children too, by the way. What's happening? That close relationship that you started out with when you said, I do, has now become, do I have to? Why? When? I don't want to. Well, what happened to I do? I did. Never again, right? So you see what's happening here, you're losing that close relationship. And on top of that, you're blaming us for moving on. You want us to stay in the same stick, in the same swamp that you're in. And you see, where you're at is not attractive to me. I was hoping that where we're going would be attractive to you. But I can't control where you want to stay. And by God, you can't control where I'm at either. So I'm trying to tell you why your relationships are going sour. Now he says, you shall love thy neighbor as thyself. But it also means thou shalt love thy fellow. Fellow means a partner who's an equal and a peer. So you got to have that. You're not capable of loving with something that isn't a partner, an equal, and a peer. For the simple reason that equals and partners and peers cannot mate, and they certainly cannot reproduce. Why do you think the marriage relationship, the intimate part of the relationship, starts getting staler and staler? And I'll say it's stinky. In fact, I had a lady said once, our physical relationship stinks. I'm not surprised. It's dead. What would you expect from something that's dead? Two dead people, senseless, obsolete, lacking positive qualities. Oh, they're breathing all right, but they're dead nonetheless. He says, thou shalt love thy partner, thy equal, and thy peer. Can you see why it's important that we grow together? Can you see why it's important that the flock ought to stay together? Can you see why it's important that I need to stay close to Jesus, and you need to stay close to me, and you need to stay close to each other? We need to be close. Because you see, if we don't stay close, our relationship is going to suffer. And to the degree that we lose the closeness, to that degree, we can't love one another. Because I can only love those that are like me. And you can only love those that are like you. And looking at your life and looking at mine, I'd rather stay where I'm at. You're not offering me or showing me anything that would induce me to go across the street, much less follow you. Fellow means not only partner, equal, and peer, but it means someone who has the same ideas, the same position, the same work, and who's in the same condition as you are. Now, can you see how you started out loving and being close and having an intimate friendship, really close? And the more you learn about this individual, the more you realize they don't have the same ideas as you. They certainly don't have the same position, the same work, and they're not in the same condition. Either because you miscalculated or because they're growing and you're not. Or maybe you're shrinking, as I said. But the minute you realize they don't have the same ideas, the same position, the same work, and in the same condition as you are, they're no longer your fellows. Then you can no longer love them. You can't do it, because the word says you shall love thy fellow as thyself. In other words, we are so egotistical as human beings that we can't love anybody but ourselves. So you see, the condition that you're in is going to tell you what's attractive to you and what attracts and what you're attracted to. And then because you stink, you curse the flies. They're just doing their job. See, a fly is a fly is a fly, because a rose by any other name still smells the same. I care what you call yourself, if you stink, I'll know it because you got flies. So you see, you love someone who has the same ideas, the same position, the same work, and is in the same condition, which means you need a fellow idiot and a fellow jerk. You need someone who's just like you. Why do you think kids in school, some idiot walks in with ringworm and his hair's falling out in patches, and someone looks and says, "Cool, man," and he goes home and does the same thing. And then pretty soon everybody looks like they have ringworm. Well, what are they doing? Well, they want to be the same position, the same work, and in the same condition as each other. In other words, they're fellow idiots. Somebody decides they want holes in their ears, and everybody gets holes in their ears. Then someone wants a hole in their nostril, and they got holes in their nostrils. The next thing you see, they're going to be putting plates in their lips. Which I suppose would save you a little time in the morning on the way to work, because you put your Cheerios in there and off to work and eat on the way to work. Don't put a little bowl in there. Little bowl. You love the one that has the same idea, the same position, the same work, and in the same condition. Did you ever stop to think why you don't love me? Did you ever stop to think that if I didn't have the calling of God, how could I love you? How could he put me in this position, show me what he shows me? Certainly I don't have the same ideas. I certainly don't have the same position. I also do not have the same work. And thank God I'm not in the same condition. But see, there's an exception made in I'm called. And don't take that wrong, like if it's something I did. See, I was called for years before I answered. That's how stupid I am. Thou shalt love thy fellow as thyself. The other definition of the word fellow means one who lays down wealth for a joint undertaking. In other words, one who is willing to submit and commit something to your joint undertaking. You want to fight? I'll do part of it. You want to cuss? I'll cuss you too. You're one, your mother's another one. And you're worse than your daddy too. But see what happens, you're both contributing for this joint undertaking, which is to fight, to argue, to criticize, whatever. Now I tell people, when someone comes and does that to you, why would you want to make it a joint undertaking? Well, she hates me, he hates me, she doesn't do this. That's fine. I don't agree with that. But it isn't a joint undertaking yet, is it? The minute you decide that you're going to do likewise to them, it becomes a joint undertaking. Now you are a fellow countryman. And what have they done? They've dragged you down to their level. Why? Because that's the only way they can love you. And incidentally, why would that be attractive to you? Are you missing that? I think so. I'll tell you truthfully, and it's no credit to me, I don't find that attractive anymore. I don't have a desire to be part of anybody's fight or argument. I don't have a desire to make it a joint undertaking. But the minute someone says or does something that you don't like, which really is the way you are, then you make it a joint undertaking by participating on the other end and criticizing them back. Well, that makes you fellow countrymen. The joint undertaking becomes a fight, an argument, or whatever. Fellow also means an accomplice. Now, how can you go to God and appeal to him about this crime that was committed against you, which you're an accomplice to? That's like going to the police to report the person who robbed the bank, and you have your money full of pockets because, or your pockets full of money. I'll get it right. Because you drove the getaway car. Now you're going to go turn them in? You're an accomplice. They put you in jail too. See, the problem is they can't accomplish it without an accomplice. Don't you understand that? Can you not see that Satan is using you to accomplish a defeat in someone else's life? Now, I'm going to talk to you that are a little more spiritual, that have been here a little bit longer, that think you know everything. Along comes some unholy guacamole individual who doesn't really know what they're doing yet. And they stumble around and they do something wrong. But they can't accomplish it without an accomplice. So what do? In your infinite wisdom, you've been here so long, you've heard so many messages, you've been counseled so much, you've listened to so many tapes, and here comes this poor, demented individual trying to accomplish something wrong, and you jump in, become the accomplice, help them do it, and then turn them into God. That makes no sense at all. Fellow also means an associate, a person of the same class, the same rank, who's a mate. In other words, one of a pair. See, so you really shouldn't go turn that individual into God because you're just blowing the whistle on yourself. And why is this individual a fellow? Because he's a fellow countryman. And countryman means a person of one's own country or a compatriot. And a compatriot, one that's fervently patriotic and supports and loves fervently the same thing. So a compatriot in terms of America would be one who loves and supports fervently the United States of America. A compatriot in golf is one who supports and loves fervently the game. Compatriots, we love the same thing and we support the same thing. Well, you see, when you come and report on each other, you're a compatriot. You love the same thing. Now he says this individual, by the end of the definition, is a neighbor. A neighbor is a person who lives near another. Well, she's always so depressed. A neighbor is one who lives near another. See, you live in Heartbreak Hotel too, don't you? On Uneasy Street. Just around the corner from Oh My God Boulevard. So you see, you live right near that individual. That's why it tugs at you, it reminds you where you're at. Neighbor means not only one that you live near, but one that you're in close association with. It means to have friendly relations with, to associate with on friendly terms. In other words, a friend. And a friend is a person on the same side in a struggle. Now, here is this individual's struggle. I'm doing wrong, and I want to blame you. So they say, well, I can deal with that because I'm doing wrong, and I want to blame you. So you agree, right? You agree to criticize one another. You agree to accuse the brethren. You agree not to admit your own fault in the problem. You agree to deny and excuse your own wrong, and let's crucify you for yours. And then the other one says, yeah, well, I can agree with that, so I think I'm right, and we'll crucify you. So see, you're friendly enemies. You see, you're really... tell you this individual, what this individual thinks of you, but he's also telling you what he thinks of himself. Keep that in mind. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Now, we get to the bottom part, verse 40. If you don't get anything else, this whole message won't make sense unless we know what verse 40 says, because Jesus said, on these two commandments, you getting this, loving the Lord, loving your neighbor, and loving yourself with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, loving yourself, loving your neighbor, the same way you love God, on that hangs all the commandments, all the law. On those two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now, Jesus said, on these two commandments. Now, get it out of your mind that this means just ten suggestions. What this word commandment means, it comes from a Greek word that means on these authoritative prescriptions. Authoritative prescription. In other words, he says, on the authoritative prescription hangs all the law and the prophets. In other words, you're not going to get anything from God unless it's an authorized prescription. I don't care what we're talking about. It must be authorized, and it must be a prescription. So the first thing it must have, it must be authoritative. It says, understand this, if you want to do the first two, if you want to love the Lord thy God, if you want to love your neighbor and yourself in the same fashion, you better understand that all that hangs on these two commandments, these authoritative prescriptions. In other words, for the sake of a better term, a prescription for your health. It has to be authoritative. Authoritative means that has and shows authority, something that's official. Something that's based on competent authority. Now, these sermons are based on the Word of God. If that isn't competent and authoritative enough for you, you're in the wrong building. Authoritative not only means something that's based on what's competent and what's authoritative, but it also means reliable. Authoritative means reliable because it comes from one who is an expert and properly qualified. Now, how can you tell if a person's an expert in any area? Well, if they're a dentist and they have no teeth, my guess is they're not a very expert dentist. So you see, if this authoritative prescription on how you ought to handle your marriage is coming from someone who doesn't have a clue how to handle theirs, I would say they're not an expert. And some would say, but I am an expert. My wife loves me, and I love my wife, and we have no problems. I'm an expert. Are you properly qualified? Were you called? Well, I don't know. I can tell you. Come Friday, look at your check. And in the upper left-hand corner will be the one that called you. That's the one that's feeding you. That's your life's work. That's what God called you to do. Now, if it says Victory Bible Church on your check, please forgive me. I'm in your position. If it doesn't, get out of my face, will you please? Don't try to do my job. Just because you're an expert doesn't mean you're properly qualified. You see, this prescription has to have authority. In other words, what you're told, the prescription you're given, if it doesn't have authority, it's not from God. Even though it might be the truth, it has to come through the individual that God called. So what I'm telling you, ladies, you're not going to get this from somebody else. You're not going to learn how to be in subjection. You're going to get it through your husband, who's going to get it through me, who's going to get it through Matthew, who got it through the Holy Spirit, who got it from Jesus, who got it from the Father. Well, you're not going to have it. That's the line of command. Now, this authority, you can tell when the prescription has authority, because authority means the power or right to give commands, enforce obedience, take action, and make the final decisions. In other words, if what I tell you doesn't come to pass, if it didn't work for me and it didn't work for you, it has no authority. And if it doesn't have any authority, then it's not authoritative. And if it's not authoritative, I don't care how much it's prescribed, it's not from God. But you see, it can only be authoritative. It must be a prescription. And understand this, God is telling you where your medicine comes from, not who. See, comes the who is Jesus Christ. The where, we'll know in just a minute. You tell me through whom or through where it comes. It must be authoritative. It must be a prescription. The word prescription means the act of prescribing. It also means a doctor's written direction for the grinding of lenses for eyeglasses so that you can see. Once you were blind and now you see. It also means a doctor's written direction for the preparation and use of medicine. In other words, you're blind and you're sick. You're blind and lame. Remember, Jesus in the temple healed the blind and the lame. So you see, it has to be a doctor's written prescription that deals with your blindness and your lameness, not how wonderful you are and how much God loves you. See, when the doctor, you go to the doctor and he examines you and you're hurt and you're in pain, and you give him $50, $100 for the office call, and he gives you a prescription, and you run to the pharmacy and the prescription says, "Gosh, I love you. You're such a nice guy." The pharmacist says, "Well, I guess what I need to tell you is you're so wonderful. And Doc, or Doolittle, just loves you." "Well, that's nice, but man, I need some medicine. What if, hey, that's all it says. The prescription says, I love you. It'll be all right. I love you anyhow. One of these days you'll feel better." What would you do with that prescription? If you have any sense at all, you change doctors and go get your money back. And sue the sucker if you had any sense at all. But see, you come to a holy God and you want a prescription that doesn't deal with what's wrong with you. You want the prescription to say, "I love you. You're so wonderful. And one of these days you'll feel better." God, that's so... See, the logic just isn't there. You would never accept that in the world. Not only would you accept it spiritually, you demand it. So in order for it to be a prescription, it has to be prescribed. Let me tell you what prescribed means. So you'll know where the prescription comes from. Anything else you take is snake oil. Prescribe comes from two words, pre, which means before, and scribed, which is a Latin word, scribed, which means to write. So prescribed means to write ahead of time or right before. Now, this is prescribed. I've been writing this before I got here. You don't have anything written even now. You don't walk out of here afterwards. You don't even have an afterscribe, much less a prescribe. And yet you're out prescribing. And when people come and try to prescribe, I say, "Where is it? Where is the prescription? What are you talking about?" "Well, you're prescribing. You're telling me what I ought to do. Show me where you study. Show me where the man gave it to you to prescribe, to write it beforehand." Well, they don't have it. They got it spiritually somehow, intuitively. "Oh, I just thought this would be good for you." Well, is that the way the doctor prescribes? He just stands in his office on the 20th floor, and he writes out prescriptions and throws them out the window. And then you stand there and say, ah, there's one, and there's another one. It came from heaven. They only come through serious analysis and examination. And some fool comes along and sees you blubbering in your beer or something, and all of a sudden, they're an expert into what they ought to tell you to do, and they don't even know what's wrong with it. They can see some symptoms. But it could be that you have a serious emotional, you could be in pain emotionally, or maybe your wife starts your shorts. I don't know. And neither does he. We got to find out what the problem is here. So you do a disservice to God when you try to give out this wisdom and knowledge with no prescription. If it's from God, it'll be prescribed. If it's from God, he'll show you, this is prescribed. This was written before you were even a gleam in your father's eye, before your grandfather was a gleam in his father's eye. This was written long before you. And incidentally, this was written before you got here, long before you got here. So it's then a prescription, which means something that's written beforehand. It means something that's set down as a rule or direction, an order, a direction, an ordination to ordain. Prescribe also means to order medicine or treatment. So what is this saying? This saying is what you are receiving right now because it's written beforehand is a medicine and treatment for you. But you see, this didn't come just out of the clear blue. I have spent hours with most of you in this room listening to what ails you. Been a lot of examination has gone on here. See, and while you're home watching TV and I'm examining, and when you're out making money doing whatever you do and I'm examining, and then you're home sleeping while I'm examining, and you're out having fun and fellowshipping and going out and enjoying your family, which you should, while I'm examining, then we get together and you see the symptom and you think you can prescribe on the same level. Well, if you can, God is doing me a great disservice because he's asked me to change my lifestyle. He's asked me to change it completely. And according to you, it was unnecessary. 2 or 3 minutes, a zap or two, and you know everything. Could it be that you're doing a disservice to the Word of God rather than a service? And let me tell you something. Nobody prescribes worse. It's bad enough to say, well, he came and he told me, and I didn't ask him. She came and told me. I wonder why. I wonder why someone would come and tell you something that's wrong for your hurt. Could it be that's what you do? See, you always make out your own prescriptions, always. And then you get mad when someone says, well, I'll do that too. Let's both do it, fellow. Let's be fellow countrymen here. Oh no, you don't like this. So now he says, now to understand this, because anybody could go home and write something and say, well, here it is, it's prescribed. I wrote it ahead of time. Wait a minute, we're not done yet. He said, on these two commandments, on this authoritative prescriptions, hang all the law and the prophets. In other words, if they don't hang, they're not from God. Well, now it's very important that we know what the word hang means. It means something that is attached to something above with no support from below. Hang means something that is attached to something above with no support from anything below. Now that's Jesus Christ on the cross, isn't it? He's attached to something above the Father, and he had no support below. None. Absolutely none. Now, what does that take? It took a man who was attached with no support from below and having no problem with that, by the way. So what does that tell me? I've got to hang just like he did. Thank God, not on the cross. I thank God for that. Oh, I would have whimpered all the way up the hill. I would have left a trail that you'd have thought Circus Vargas and the parade came by. And I'm not ashamed to admit it, by the way. Man, I'm showing you something now. You got to hang, brother. You got to be attached to something above with no support from below. None. Not needing and not wanting, and you sure as hell are not going to have it. I can tell you, if you're attached to something above, you'll have no support from below. Let me tell you something else, my friend. Right now, you might as well get this. If you have support from below, you're not attached to something above. You're hanging upside down. And by the way, we had one of the disciples who suffered that fate. Hung upside down. See, this is not a game that we're playing here. You need to understand that God didn't take and hang you all. He took one man, Jesus Christ, and hung him and attached him to something above with no support below, absolutely none. And then he comes around and he says, this is my son. This is a type. This is the example. Reuben, you need to be attached to something above and you'll have no support from anything below. Now that would make most preachers have some kind of a gallbladder attack. I think it's a blessing. I know it's a blessing. And let me tell you something else, men. Let me tell you why your wife is having difficulty following you. Because you're bound and determined to have support from below. What she thinks of you, what the children think, your image, so important to you. And what you give up, being attached to something above. And what do you settle for? Support from below. Let me tell you what you're doing here. Because you see, there's something above. Well, what is above? What does he mean, above? Well, it means attached to something above. Now, let's find out what above means. Something that's in a higher place than you are. Something that's in a higher place than you are. Something that's over your head. Now, that one I can justify just like that. 30 seconds and I can show it's over your head. Above means something that's up from where you're at. It means something that's higher in power, higher in status. It means something from heaven. That's what above means. But let me tell you what it requires. A calling from God to be attached to something above and no support from below. Just like my Lord and my God. I don't take this thing very lightly anymore. He humbles me. I have no right to be here. And you have no right to try to move me. Because I had no right to put myself up here. I was put here. I'll admit, kicking and screaming wasn't my idea, but I'm here. Attached to something above with no support from below. In a higher place and over your head, higher in power and status. Above means something from heaven. And I just happen to be the channel, that's all. But man, I'm telling you, you can have the same position at home. The reason you don't have it is because you try to deny it to me here. Because you don't recognize my calling here, yours isn't recognized at home. And you cease to be something from above. Well, if you're not attached to something above with no support from below, then you must be attached to something below with no support from something above. Well, let me tell you what this below place is. No support from below. Below means on a lower floor. 1, 2, 3. On a lower floor or a lower deck. No support. And that isn't the easiest thing to deal with, by the way. For the simple reason that I have the same needs and the same desires as any one of you. But because I have a different calling, somehow your needs supersede mine. And I don't do this and say, oh, I love you so much, Lord, and I just want to do this, and oh, it's so hard. You know what it really boils down to? The calling makes it in my life that if I didn't do it, I'd be miserable and unhappy. This isn't something hard to do. This is something I want to do. I've got to do it. It's my life. It's my desire to do it. Now, if that's true of me, why wouldn't it be true of you and your families? Well, because you've got it backwards. You want to be attached to something below. And then you have no support from above. Below means, as I said, on a lower floor or a lower deck, which means I get no support. I'm not talking financially. I thank God he takes care of all that. But you see, you're always fighting and arguing and always going against. You have to be convinced. You have to be almost beat into it. You're guilty of non-support, by the way. Below means also lower than in position or rank. See, you want to be attached to those that are lower than you in position or rank. You want support. You want attachment with your wife. You want attachment to your children. You want attachment to all those things. But the way you do it is you want support from them. You don't know the difference between support and attachment. And God said, if you hang, you'll be attached to something above and no support. None from below. Agreement? You bet. Fellowship? You bet. Fellowship? More or less. But you see, it always has to be precluded. You always got to keep it in mind. You're either attached to the above, you'll get no support from below, or you can reverse it to your hurt. You can't do it both ways. Now, the last part, the support from below, for those of you that just got to have the support, you've got to have the agreement, the concurrence of everyone around you. You got to have it from below. The last definition of the word below is just the opposite of the last definition of the word above, which meant from heaven. So below means from hell. Look it up in your dictionary. So if you are not willing to be attached to something above with no support from below, then you have no support from heaven and you're attached to hell. And if you think you can make a marriage work that way, you are sadly mistaken. How in the world are you ever going to get along with someone that you're with 24 hours a day when you cannot get along with people you only see on the weekends and on Wednesday? The fact of the matter is that Jesus Christ gave us an example. And being the man of God, the example was to you and I, men, in our individual capacities. You're called to be the husband. You're called to be the spiritual head at home, just like I'm called to be the spiritual head here. And that means you have to hang, or you're not going to do your job. You have to be attached to heaven. You have to be attached to the Word, and no support from below. Because I'm going to tell you something. Below doesn't like what you're saying. And never will, by the way. And he says, now on all this hangs the law and the prophets. The law means the gospel. The law means the gospel as a prescriptive medicine. The law means the gospel that makes you well, one that supports you. the gospel that heals you. You want a gospel that supports and entertains you. He says, so the gospel hangs. In other words, if the gospel, if the truth comes to a man through a man who hangs, who's attached to something above with no support from below, then what that individual says is going to heal you. You can get on TV, you can go to any church you want, and they've said this, God loves you, you're healed, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo, abracadabra, expialidocious, the whole thing, and it doesn't work, does it? You know why? The man didn't hang. The man isn't attached to something above with no support from below. He's after your support. And therefore, it doesn't work for you. It's not that he's unspiritual. It's not that even he knows less than I do. He's probably better educated than I am. He just doesn't know how to hang. He doesn't understand what happened at Calvary. That wasn't the end for you and I. It was the beginning. Jesus said it was finished in terms of what he had to do. But it was the beginning for you and I. And he says this law, this prescriptive usage, this healing power hangs on the commandments, the two commandments. And he says, and also for you prophets. He says, the prophets hang too. And prophet means an inspired speaker, a foreteller. Let me tell you something, then I'm done. A foreteller. See, people think that means that's someone that tells the future. All you have to do is look at the word, foreteller. Now, I'm a teller. Here's my little booth. I'm here to speak. I'm the teller, you're the listener. Well, what does fore mean? In front of and above. So what's a prophet? One that's in front of you and above you that's telling you how to be healed from the law, who is hanging on something above, attached to something above, needing or wanting or desiring no support from below. That's how you get healed. And let me tell you something that I've learned, and I'm learning more every day. Your health and your welfare and what God wants for you depends on me just as much as it does on you. We both have a job to do here. And I, for one, am willing and desirous to do mine. But I'll tell you one thing. I no longer have a desire to do both. For the simple reason that I can't, and now I don't even want to. So it's time to grow up, friends. It's time to start doing your job. Or we're going to grow further and further apart. And you're going to start attracting those people in the world again. Those that are your peers. Those of you that are stuck in the mud just like you are, and you'll cycle your life all over again. I don't suggest that to you. Hope and pray to God that you don't. But if you do, stick in the mud and see if I care. I've done all I can do. I've prayed all I can pray. I've taught all I know how. I've studied until I'm purple. I've come to the conclusion some of you just flat don't want to. If you don't want to, why should I? I suggest you get up and come along. Whether you know it or not, the rest of us are having a great time. This is a great life. And it's for you too. But the choice is yours. Brother Bob Pacheco, would you close the services in prayer?